Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Well, this week, San Francisco could become the first U.S. city to ban the use of facial recognition by police and other city agencies, the latest backlash against the proliferation of surveillance technology in daily life. But a growing body of researchers say privacy advocates should be just as concerned about digital surveillance by companies, or what they've deemed surveillance capitalism. Derek Thompson is senior editor at The Atlantic. He joins us as he does each Monday from New York. Hi, Derek.
Hi, Jeremy.
So I just spoke with a woman the other day who was very angry to find out that JetBlue was letting her board her plane using facial recognition as a form of ID provided to JetBlue by the government without her knowledge. Where else do we see what people are calling surveillance capitalism?
Just about everywhere there's an internet connection. When we go online to shop, to search, to talk to friends on Facebook Messenger or Instagram or Twitter, we are surveilled. We understand that we are in an essentially a bargain with these companies, that we get to use their cheap or even free services. And in exchange, we give up certain rights, like the right to essentially have our digital activities monitored. But then even when we're offline, surveillance continues. It continues with pharmacy rewards cards, with smart devices like smart refrigerators and smart toys, with our smartphones themselves. We're all participants in a grand experiment of surveillance that has a simple equation at the heart of it, that we essentially get to use cheap or even free services and products, and in exchange, the companies that provide these services and products keep them cheap by collecting our data and doing something else with it.
And does it make a difference to you if it is, let's say, a police camera that is monitoring you, or if it's a camera that belongs to a company?
To me, it makes a huge difference. I make a huge distinction between government surveillance and corporate surveillance. But the more interesting question, I think, is whether or not it makes a difference to most Americans. So this is a question that I asked in my podcast, Crazy Genius with The Atlantic. I was interested in how the definition of privacy has changed so much in American history. So in the late 19th century, when you have the invention of the telegraph and the telephone, privacy was really about information. It was about whether or not our nosy neighbors were spying on us, because communication that used to be private was now being conducted over public wires. Then in the 20th century, the definition of privacy changed. It became not about nosy neighbors, but about nosy government. It was about McCarthyism and fears of George Orwell's 1984. Then in the 21st century, the definition of privacy has changed again. It's not about information and nosy neighbors. It's not necessarily just about government surveillance. It's about corporate surveillance. It's about this fleet of products and services that have that grand bargain at the center of them. So for many people, I think they might still hold on to a 20th century definition of privacy. But a lot of the privacy advocates that we're seeing talking today are thinking about a 21st century definition of the term.
Well, and as you say, though, a lot of Americans don't seem to care about all of this surveillance by companies. What is the actual harm to an individual who, let's say, gives up their personal data in exchange for something like Google Maps?
To be honest, I don't know. And I think it's very, very difficult for anybody to say that they know exactly what the ultimate harm of giving up this data is. And that ignorance, I think, is a part of the problem. When a lot of Americans, thousands of them, were participating in a personality quiz on Facebook in 2016, they might have thought, what's the worst thing that could possibly happen with participating in a personality quiz? But that personality quiz that I'm referring to was being conducted by an organization called Cambridge Analytica that used the information that Americans gave up in that quiz, connected it with their friend groups to create psychographic profiles of voters to mobilize some voters to vote for Donald Trump, to demobilize other voters that might have seemed more likely to vote for Hillary Clinton, and thus threatened to make a lot of Americans, not just those that participated in the quiz, but many, many more, millions, question what was at the heart of American democracy, whether someone else was pulling the strings, and whether our vote actually counted the way that it should have been counted. And so I think it's important to say that what's happening at the end of this equation isn't always clear, but we shouldn't take that ignorance as a sign that we should necessarily trust all these companies. Many times, I think we should then ask the next question, what do our laws say these companies can do once the data has been collected?
Well, what can be done? What are people supposed to do about this? And is there any escaping surveillance capitalism in our daily lives, or does there need to be new regulation?
I think there does need to be new regulation. I think that regulation should do three key things. Number one, it should be harder for us to give up our most precious data. So many times as you go around the internet, you see these OK buttons. Are you all right with our privacy, with our terms of service? OK. Are you all right with our privacy terms? OK. And we just click OK, 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 because we can't possibly spend time reading all of this fine print. So one, it should be harder to give up our data. Two, it should be harder for the companies that we are in a bargain with to sell it. And third, it should be harder for third-party organizations, particularly political campaigns, to buy it. Because the biggest threat here is not the individual threat. It's not like individual robbery. The biggest threat, I say in the podcast, is it's like climate change, a diffuse threat. You can't connect a hurricane to any one individual's failure to recycle. Rather, you understand that you're a part of a larger system. Mm-hmm. And it's all of our data emissions contributing to what is essentially a climate change of the internet. And that is the ultimate danger of digital surveillance today.
You know, there's a saying, if you're not paying for it, you're not the customer, you're the product being sold. And I know that there's a researcher you spoke with, Derek, who said this, I love this quote, "We're not the ivory. We are not what is poached. We are the carcass that is left behind." We will link people to your piece about surveillance capitalism in the Atlantic at hereandnow.org. And check out Crazy Genius. Derek, thanks.
Thank you.